Really, the biggest thing that I see that separates people who succeed and people who stay on the sidelines is this willingness to try something out, like this willingness to experiment, and the acceptance that choosing what's next doesn't mean choosing what's forever.
You're listening to Pubcast Worldwide.
Greetings, thirsty listeners, and welcome to this episode of Pubcast Worldwide, the podcast where we get to know interesting people around the world, chatting with them over beers, cocktails, and other libations at the coolest pubs, bars, and breweries on the planet. I'm your host, Chris Lukey, a media maverick, serial event planner, and an explorer of the furthest reaches of the greater San Francisco Bay Area, which is perfect for today's episode because we are heading to Livermore, California. We're going to be heading to Shadow Puppet Brewery, where we'll be meeting up with Nick Loper, the chief side hustler at Side Hustle Nation. Nick, like myself, is a fellow podcaster. He is the host of the Side Hustle Show. And to give you a bit of backstory, I actually met him this past summer at a podcasting conference we were both attending in Anaheim. So it was exciting to get him on the show once we got back in town. As you might guess from the title, Side Hustle Nation is full of tips for generating more income on the side, whether that's a full hustle of your own or some other tools and tricks that you can do to generate some passive income in your everyday life. So with that said, what are the three things that you can expect from this episode? First, Nick will discuss some practical tips on side hustling. Whether it's discussing multiple frameworks for starting your first side hustle or talking about case studies like an ex-engineer that teaches people how to play piano in 21 days, Nick goes over a number of actionable tips. So if you are someone that's looking to generate some extra revenue on the side or start a project or business or whatever it may be, I definitely recommend you listen to this episode. Second, you're going to get to know Nick, not just how he started Side Hustle Nation, but we also jump into some stories about his world travels, his hometown of Seattle, and how he ultimately made his way to calling Livermore, California home. Finally, since Nick is a fellow podcaster, he actually flips the interview around and asks me some questions from the get-go. This is a bit of fun because we get to talk about some of the podcasts that inspired us to start our respective shows, and we also get to give some shout-outs to some of our favorites. So hopefully you enjoy this first part of the interview. Like I mentioned, we met up at Shadow Puppet Brewing. This is a small brewery out in Livermore, but these guys are certainly getting creative with their beers. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but there's some very interesting styles that Nick and I get to venture into throughout this episode. But with that, no more time for the intro. Let's get ready to head to Livermore. Grab a drink, grab your credit card, and let's hustle on over to Shadow Puppet Brewing to meet up with Nick Loper.
Yeah, I think you're in a good mic position. You just want to make sure you're able to drink and talk at the same time.
I should practice that.
Oh, nailed it. Like a pro. It's like you've podcasted before or something.
Never podcasted from a brewery before.
This is a unique spot. We'll hit the live feed. Well, I'm going to greet the folks from Facebook Liveland really quickly. We're here with Nick Loper at Shadow Puppet Brewing in Livermore, California.
Lovely Livermore, California.
Yeah, this is my first... Well, I've been to Livermore before, but this is a little deeper east than I normally go.
Not much reason to come out here.
We got some breweries out here now. And a wonderful wine region out here, too, that we can't forget.
It is. It's the poor man's Napa.
Well, Nick, welcome to Pubcast Worldwide. I know we cheers it up before, but we will cheers it again.
Thanks for having me.
And what did you decide to kick things off with?
I am on the Loopy IPA.
Is that their flagship IPA? That's the kind of just straight hoppy IPA that they've got, correct?
Seems like a pretty standard West Coast IPA. It's got some tang, got some tang to it.
Yeah, good. What is it? Mango, guava notes, maybe something along those lines.
I'm sure if I read the taste, that's what we used to do. We'd go wine tasting, be like, oh, I'm picking up hints of currant.
Exactly. I can't wine taste for the life of me. I can barely beer taste. Yeah. So. But I went with the Cinch, the vanilla cream ale, which almost sounded along the lines of more something I'd have with coffee, but Let me try this again to try to catch the vanilla a little bit here.
That's not what I expected it to look like. I thought it was going to be more of a stout or porter looking pour once it once it all cleared up.
Because it's a nitro beer, and this and cream ales, they do them on nitro, and they do. I actually prefer cream ales carbonated, not on nitro, if I had to take the pick. But I mean, it's borderline what you get over in like Ireland or something like that. Good spot to start, and then I've got another little one to catch up. We'll update the listeners on a little later on, but. It has been a while since I've done a San Francisco episode. I should say a Bay Area episode, more appropriately. To give a little description of where we're at, we already described the region as the poor man's Napa. Was that was that your term for it?
Yeah, we've been out here 10 years, and so there's a ton of wineries, and actually the wine region has become much more of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
The winemakers have invested in fancier facilities, and like it's become kind of a tourist destination.
Yeah, and for those not familiar with the Bay Area, we are in like the deep East Bay, is what I like to call. We're not in Oakland. We're like another 45 minutes past Oakland in a spot called Livermore that's really come up just, I guess, in the past 10 years, really.
Yeah, this is the last stop before you're in full, like, Central Valley.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. But we'll talk about that a little bit more later, but we're at Shadow Puppet Brewing today, which is, these guys are relatively new here.
Yeah, these guys have only been around for probably 10 or 11 months at this point, so they're the newest game in town on the beer front.
And they're kind of well hidden in an office park looking area, but once you get inside, I mean, this is definitely brewery-esque, big space out back. We're sitting next to probably some barrels that they're aging some stuff in right now, if I had to take a wild guess.
Yeah, so Ruby Hill Winery, that's one of the well-known wineries in town. Oh, here's Sutherland. Sutherland Distillery is actually by where we live. It's like one of the first distilleries in town.
I didn't know they had distilleries out
here. It's a drinking town.
Not bad. I guess when you're this far from San Francisco and given the traffic that we've got here, it makes sense to have some backup options here. But to appropriately introduce our guest today, I'm joined by Nick Loper, who is the chief side hustler. Is that the best way to describe it? At Side Hustle Nation?
That's what it says on my business card, man.
All right. No, that's a good business card to have, and also a very experienced podcaster. I'd put you in the old guard, one of the originals that really helped get it going.
Well, I don't know about that. I started in 2013, and it was probably already 10 years old at that point.
Well, yeah. I do consider anyone that started in that 11 to 13 range to still be a little more on the cutting edge than some of us that have jumped on it in the latter half of this decade,
sure.
I should say.
The real guys, like the dudes who got started like before iTunes.
Yeah.
That's where it's like, okay, you're hardcore.
Yeah. Was that even called a podcast back then? I don't know my podcasting history enough, but did they have a different name at that point?
It was still a podcast because it was like for the iPod. Like you'd have to like figure out how to USB the thing, like this MP3 file onto your iPod, and it took some dedication.
Yeah. Not as simple as it is now. Just everything going through the cloud, for lack of a better word, I should say.
Well, how'd you get into podcasting? Like, that's kind of a good question because I have my story of like what got me hooked on it.
Ooh, I like that you flipped the questions on me. This early, that's a new one. How did I get into it? This will be a good time to share my story because I actually don't know if I've really shared it with the listeners yet.
Okay.
So, but I got into it because I think it's a little unique. I thought to myself, if there was one thing in the world I could do, what would it be? And the answer was, well, it'd be cool to be Anthony Bourdain. That guy seems to have a pretty sweet gig going for him. He travels around the world. He eats with cool people. He drinks with cool people. I'm like, there's really no barrier to entry to eating and drinking with cool people in different spots. So I'm like, well, what would be my medium to do that? And I said, well, I'll start a podcast. I think it's a little easier to produce than a video. Provides a different little bit of a format. And also, one thing that I think is a little unique to me is I used to play in a band, and I kind of look at this as like a little element of performance as well. It's like putting on a show, where there are plenty of good reasons to do podcasts. Some use it as another avenue to market their product or company. Some use it as a way to provide information on a very niche topic, be that video games or taking concert photography. I just came across a podcast specifically on concert photography the other day.
Wow, that's niche.
But to kind of fulfill that performance need.
Were you a voracious podcast listener before starting yours?
I have subscribed and unsubscribed and resubscribed to many podcasts over the years. I think John Lee Dumas and Entrepreneur on Fire was my intro to podcasting back in 2011, 2012 was one of the first ones I came across. And then guys like Pat Flynn. Then I got into some other niche punk rock podcasts. I'm a big punk rock fan. So yeah, I'd say I was an avid listener, and I picked up and dropped off of various podcasts through throughout my time.
You ever listen to Hardcore History? This is the one like I'm like obsessed with right now.
Yeah, I've never gotten into it as much as I should. I think just because of the length. Like, yeah. It takes dedication to listen
to
those.
Yeah, no, they're like 3-4 hours. So I'm like probably 10 or 11 hours deep into like this 5-part series on World War One right now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how is he like scripting this? Is he just like going off the cuff? Like, it's like production is amazing.
And that's Dan Carlin, right? That's his name behind it?
It is. And like several people had recommended the show. Hey, you got to check it out. He was on the stage at Podcast Movement when we were hanging out down in Anaheim, and I was like, okay, I'll finally check out his show. And I'm like, this is why he's on the keynote stage. Like, it's really good.
He's very good. And actually, I'm always looking for new shows, interesting shows, one that either teach me something or one that's just well put together and entertaining. I would say those are the ones I'm looking at. But what about yourself? You mentioned Dan Carlin. Were there any others that you were hooked on before you jumped into the game?
Well, for me, I came into podcasting kind of by accident. So I remember like I followed a link from Facebook or Twitter or something, like had a compelling sounding title. Mm-hmm. And I land on this page, and then you find out ultimately like, oh, this is audio? And it's like, being like physically upset at that, like, oh, you hid the nugget like 40 minutes deep into this MP3 file.
Yeah.
And that was like, you know, pre-smartphones, at least for me. And so it took a little bit of doing to get this thing like onto my device. But once I did, like, I was hooked.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, all of these dog walks, all of these runs, all this gym time, all this drive time was like, oh man, now this is like education time. This is learning time.
Mm-hmm.
Pull over every now and again to like take a couple notes and you're back on the road. For me, it was Smart Passive Income, like you said, and it was the Tropical MBA show. Those are kind of the two.
Listen to that one as well, Tropical MBA. Yeah, like all of a sudden once I got into podcasting, like I found a way to make exercise or my downtime productive. Because it wasn't just listening to my favorite album anymore. There was a choice. And it was on-demand audio.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Well, to bring it back to you for a second, because we talked about podcasting a little bit, but let's go back a little further. How did Side Hustle Nation come to be? What was the inspiration, and what were the beginnings?
So SideHustleNation.com began kind of spring of 2013, and it began after some soul searching on, like, you know, what do you want to be known for when people Google you, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But prior to that, I mean, it started as a side project to the business that I was running full-time at the time, which, of course, started as a side. That was my original side hustle. That one started on the side from my day job.
Yeah.
And that was a footwear comparison shopping site. So it would, you know, aggregate the catalogs from Zappos and Amazon and all these different online shoe stores and say, well, here's where you can find the best price. And it would make affiliate commission on if anybody bought through through that site. And this was back in the day when comparison shopping was a much bigger thing. There were sites like Price Grabber and Nextag and Shopping.com. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, like, whatever the statistic is, most people just start their product search on Amazon.
Right.
And so back in the day, people would start their product search on Google. Yep. My theory was, hey, if I have shoes in the domain name, like, that will appear to be more relevant than these other comparison sites that try to be everything to everyone.
Yep.
So to that end, we were actually able to build, I think, a better comparison algorithm by focusing only on that one vertical. And we were able to do some cool stuff with, you know, negotiating special deals and like integrating those deals into the price calculator. And so it was fun business for quite a while.
How did you come across that specific niche for footwear comparison? I could imagine like seeing that as a problem. Was that scratching your own itch to an extent?
Not at all. Like, I was probably my own worst customer. It was, I probably bought like 3 shoes over like the almost 10 years that I ran this business.
Got it.
What happened was I'd interned at a company in Seattle. That's you know, Seattle's where I grew up. Interned with a company out there that had a brick and mortar shoe store. And, you know, like in the early days of the internet, like 1996, they had this wild and crazy idea. Well, why don't we put up some of our inventory online? This is way before I even got there.
Sure.
But of course, the online portion of their business just took off, you know, way faster than their little brick and mortar store in Seattle. And so when I came on as the marketing intern guy, I was in charge of some of their pay-per-click ads, some of a little bit of their SEO. No, I didn't touch a ton of that, but their affiliate program too. And so I would see, you know, how much some of these affiliates were making and be like, well, this is an interesting model. They don't hold any inventory. They don't have really any risk in the game.
Yeah.
And yet they're making money and they're supporting sales. Like, they're helping us drive sales. Mm-hmm. And so that was an interesting thing. And so after that internship ended, I said, well, shoot, I could probably do what those guys are doing.
Yeah.
And I started with like direct link pay-per-click ads. I don't even think this is still like allowed by Google, where you'd mm-hmm. say, I want to bid on like this specific keyword, like this specific model of shoe, mm-hmm. and send them directly to whoever had the best price at the time with yep. my affiliate link in the destination URL. And like with a budget of like a dollar a day, because I was like still in college at this time, and like AdWords would like let you set your budget. And so that was the original precursor to the comparison site. It was kind of like testing it on a really small scale with these mm-hmm. Direct ads.
So you basically took the experience you had had and then created your own hustle right. out of it. Got it. When did Side Hustle Nation evolve at that point, or when did that come about?
So it came about, you know, years and years later. So I started doing the shoe thing like in college, mm-hmm. you know, after graduation, really that summer, like invested in having a site built, say, hey, I think I could turn this into something. Like I was hoping mm-hmm. in the back of my head, this could be my escape path out of the corporate life. I could build my own ladder instead of having trying to climb this one. And so 3 years of nights and weekends later, like that became a reality. I was actually sitting, I was out to dinner with beers with my boss
yeah.
and finally got up the nerve to tell him I'm out. And
yeah.
And so I was running that business full time for, you know, for several years mm-hmm. and always trying to start other things on the side just for the sake of diversification, just for the sake of like trying to do something else. And most of those projects died, you know, a quiet death in like some dark corner of the internet.
Sure.
But a couple of them stuck around, and one of them that did was the Side Hustle project, because mm-hmm. it was like, you know, proud to stamp my name on, and something that like I could really see myself working on for a long time, and said, "Hey, I want to build a brand here."
And then when did the podcast come about?
Same time, spring.
So you started it all at once. Yeah. It all came about at once. So what, you know, for someone that's not familiar with Side Hustle Nation, what does it do for someone that is looking to start someone on the side? Maybe take us through a case scenario of someone who's looking to get a passion project or something that generates some side income off the ground.
Sure. So as a whole, the site and the podcast like try to showcase different ways to make money outside of your day job. Like mm-hmm. that's what a side hustle is. Like how can I make some extra money in my spare time?
Mm-hmm.
And on the show specifically is mostly an interview show like the one you're listening to now.
Yep.
Breaking down, well, somebody who's been there, done that. You know, mm-hmm. how did you get this thing off the ground? How did you find your first customers? How did you market this thing? How did you manage your time? You know, mm-hmm. at what point did you feel comfortable like turning that into a full-time thing? And that has been fascinating. I mean, that's been really, really eye-opening. I thought of myself as a writer first,
mm-hmm.
and a blogger was just, well, you know, here's an experiment you could do on the side. Like, you know, I started the show for probably less than $100
yeah.
in equipment and software. And it's kind of taken on a life of its own. Like that's way, way more popular than the blog.
Right.
And I think it's just because it's a smaller sea to swim in, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, who you're competing against for
yeah.
eyeballs or earbuds.
Earbuds. Yeah. You're competing with other people with headphones is basically what it comes down
right.
to.
And on top of that, I think it's a more valuable connection too. You spend half hour, 40 minutes with somebody in your earbuds.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, develop this relationship with them over time. Just like the shows that I listen to, I feel like I know these people, even if some cases I've never met them, you know, but mm-hmm. I've listened to hours and hours of them, like in my car, on walks and stuff. And so it's ended up being a really kind of a really fun, really rewarding project that when I started, you know, had no idea where it was going to go.
You know, with any side hustling, what was the biggest struggle in keeping everything in balance? Because the inherent nature of a side hustle, it means you have something else going on that requires your time and energy. And I'm curious, what's maybe a specific challenge that you came across or had to overcome in that process?
I had a couple things going for me when I was running the shoe site. Number one was I was in a long-distance relationship. Like mm-hmm. my girlfriend from like growing up in Seattle, like we stayed together even though we were living on opposite side of the country. So
got it.
When I graduated, I took a job with Ford and moved to the East Coast. They moved me from Washington State to Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And their theory, and I don't know if they still do this, their theory was like, hey, we're going to displace all these young kids and they're going to be more loyal to the company. They're going to be better workers because like all they're going to know is Ford. And like, you know, the mm-hmm. only friends they're going to have are their coworkers, which to a certain extent was kind of true. But especially weeknights, like had a lot of time time to myself where it's like, okay, I could play video games, I can call back home, or I could watch TV. It's like, I'll try and do something a little bit more productive.
Yeah.
The other advantage that I had, too, is I had a job that kind of required me to travel for work. So I was in hotel rooms a lot of time, too, where it's like, okay, you go out to dinner, go to the gym or whatever, and then it's like, now there's really no distractions.
Yeah.
You just kind of do my own thing.
So you had the asset of time on your hands.
At the beginning, for sure.
It sounds like at some point you did not have that asset as much anymore.
So here's the biggest, I guess, misconception or myth is that, you know, once you quit your job, all of a sudden you're going to have all this time, and there's never enough time. There's always going to be stuff that you want to do that you don't have time to do, and it's been kind of stressful in a way to come to grips with that. Like, I guess I've been on both sides of the equation, like where if I could only come up with this killer idea, like I could be a great entrepreneur.
Right.
And you lately that's shifted towards like there are way too many ideas to ever have time to tackle. If you look at my like GoDaddy, you know, graveyard of domain registrations, like it's getting
kind of GoDaddy graveyard.
It's getting kind of ugly.
How many domains have you registered if you had to put a number to it?
Over a lifetime, probably 40 or 50.
Wow.
And it's just like, I'm just not going to have time to like focus on that project.
My advice to people is always buy a domain name that you think you might use when you're buzzed or after you've been out on the town, because the reality is it costs just about as much as a cocktail to get one of those domains. So if you just think about it that way, you're only investing in your next drink. It's just something that may or may not have a return on it down the line.
That's right. No, so that was a lot of fun, just trying to figure out how to nail down the time management aspect. And I actually tried to be getting better about being more honest with myself. The really common excuse of mine and everybody else's is, well, I didn't have time.
Right.
And so I've been trying to get better about saying I prioritize something else.
Yep.
And
that's a good way to describe it.
It's more honest, and then it forces you to evaluate, well, what did I prioritize? Did I prioritize, you know, hanging out with my kids? Like, okay, that's totally
important.
Valid. Like,
yeah.
I'm not going to fault you for that. Or did I prioritize, like, watching 8 hours of football on Sunday or, you know,
right.
Whatever it is.
No, it's a really good way to look at it. You know, we're kind of wrapping up round one here, which actually I've got something to tell our listeners right now. I have moved on to my second beer. I'm just doing a flight right now. Nick is drinking a full pint, so you'll hear me updating you guys on the beverages a bit more. But I've moved to a Contortion Milk Stout, which, good, creamy mouthfeel.
Yeah, what do you think about that one?
It's good. I'd say it's, you know, kind of your just straightforward milk stout, not going too crazy one way or the other. This would be something I could honestly drink on a winter's day or a hot day, which here in Livermore, it's probably more often than not going to be a hot day, but it does go down pretty smooth.
Now, what was your takeaway on the vanilla? Could you, like, drink a pint of the vanilla? Could you drink three or four of those in a row?
It's a subtle vanilla. It's definitely a subtle vanilla flavor, and cream ales go down really easily. Like, because these are actually, both of them were nitro beers, and that one, those tend to go down much smoother than a carbonated one. But I've got one more question for you before we wrap up round one, and that is, if you had one piece of advice for anyone looking to start a side hustle today, tomorrow, in the near future, what would that be?
I've got 250 episodes on this, so it's like hard to pick one.
Listen to his podcast. That is the number one piece
really,
of advice.
Really the biggest thing that I see that separates people who succeed and people who kind of stay on the sidelines is this willingness to try something out, like this willingness to experiment, and the acceptance that, you know, choosing what's next doesn't mean choosing what's forever. It's like a lot of people will start off on kind of these low barrier to entry business models, like, okay, I'm going to drive for Uber. Okay, I'm going to sell stuff on eBay. It doesn't mean you're going to like sentence yourself to doing that forever.
Yeah.
But it's really, I think you'll find it's empowering to earn those first dollars outside of a day job. Hey, I'm worth more than what it says on my business card.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that experimenter's mindset. I want to see this out, see if I like it. Hey, maybe it sucks, and maybe you're like, well, maybe I didn't need the extra money as bad as I thought as I did.
Yeah, I loved the way you phrase it as choosing something now does not mean choosing something that's forever. And I think that's what people, that's one big area people get held up on. I would say another area is just thinking there are more barriers to entry than there actually are to start something. You and I were talking before we started about whether it's a podcast or whether it's starting a blog that requires photography, people are like, oh, I need this piece of recording equipment or I need this camera. The reality is, I think you said you started your podcast and your business on less than $100,
yeah.
Right? And I started my podcast with two $30 USB microphones and a laptop, which had the laptop already. Obviously, that's a capital expense. But if you're thinking about it, that cost $60 total, which is really just a good night at the bar, all things considered. So I think a big thing is just getting in the habits and figuring out if that's something that you can stick with as well.
It's never been cheaper to start a business. So you think about, you know, even 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it's like, well, I'm going to start like a brick and mortar operation. Like I have to go take out a lease like in my town. Like that's nuts.
Yeah.
Whereas like now you're in business. In most cases, you don't even need a website. If you do need a website, you know, the domain, like Chris said, it'll cost you $10, or you could even probably find a coupon to get it less for that. Mm-hmm. You're $5 or $6 a month for hosting and you're off to the races.
Yep. Nailed it. Well, it looks like I'm getting to the bottom of my flight. You're still doing pretty good on yours, but I think this is a good time to take a quick break. So I'm going to go bottoms up, and for those of you listening, we'll be right back. Well, folks, we are back for round two, and since I went with the smaller beers, we've got a couple new ones in front of me right now, and I'm starting with the Needle Tip Spruce IPA, which, Nick, you had a chance to try as well.
This is like drinking a Christmas tree.
That is exactly what it is. I'm drinking this, and I'm worried there might be pine needles in there because it is so sprucey, but a delicious IPA nevertheless, and certainly one that I've never had a beer like this before. So if someone's looking for a reason to check out Shadow Puppet Brewing and they've never done that before, this would be a perfect reason to come out here for something that I don't think you're going to find
anywhere else. They've got some unique ones.
Yeah, I mean, the vanilla cream ale, for all practical purposes, was more along the lines of a cream ale than anything too overtly vanilla-y, but that's another spin on a beer that I haven't seen before. So I would describe this as a more creative, unconventional brewery in terms of some of the drinks they're churning out.
Yeah, for sure. I was like the prickly pear or something last time. It was like, oh, okay, that is prickly.
Yes. The prickly, piney, man, they're nailing all their flavor descriptions perfectly. But now that we're back for round two, we always like to kick off round two with a story from our guest to help us get to know you a bit better. And it's many times a drinking story, but since you're such a side hustler and know many people that are side hustlers, I'm going to let you pick a crazy story from your podcasting days, your side hustle days, or your beverage drinking days as well.
So many choices. Well, really, there's one that kind of combines a lot of those. Mm-hmm. And so one of the most rewarding things about doing the podcast is being able to connect with listeners really all around the country and in a lot of cases all around the world.
Yeah.
So I've been able to meet up with listeners, you know, and hold, you know, dinners and happy hours and stuff.
Like, I've been to one of yours before.
That's right. I forgot
to mention that. We rendezvoused for a side hustle dinner in San Jose recently.
In San Jose and in Chicago and Charlotte, you know, not really all over the place. And so that's been really cool. And, you know, I've met listeners in Vietnam and in Japan. And the story that I have in mind comes from meeting a couple listeners and a couple friends in Prague.
So
we were in Prague about a year ago, and this guy who I'd only ever met online, you know, we'd been, you know, Facebook friends, you know, in various Facebook groups and stuff for a while, which I met through another one of my side hustles. I met him through like a self-publishing side hustle, like he's got a business in that space. So he shows up at the airport, meets us at the airport, like shows us how to use the public transport, like takes us to our Airbnb, and then like proceeds to take the next couple days off of work to show us around town in Prague. And he's made, you know, lunch reservations, like, oh, is this place okay? Like, of course, it's like your town, like we're good with whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to do this. And it was really, really cool. And another dude who knew us both took the train in from Poland. It was like an 8-hour train ride, I guess, from Warsaw, and came to hang out with us. And
I didn't know I was interviewing a celebrity today. People are traveling miles to see you like they'd go see some big rock band.
That's what I told him. I was like, dude, I'm not worth it. Like, eight, like when I found out, like, because I'm looking on the map, I was like, dude, that's nowhere close. Like, what are you doing? Like, do not make that trip. And
trust me, you don't want to meet me. You do not want to come.
I was like, I promise this will be disappointing for you. And what was really cool, so, and he knew another dude who lived in Prague, like expat dude living in Prague from England. And so the four of us, we go out to this absinthe bar, And
Choice for Prague.
Yeah, and so they bring it out, and like I don't know if you've ever been or if you've ever had it, but like it's this whole experience, this whole ordeal where they have like the dry ice in the middle of the table and these like little spigoty funnel-y things that like come off of the main vessel, and you like fill up your little cup and it's like all bubbly and steamy. Like it was really, really cool. That kind of combined, you know, the side hustle stuff, the writing side hustle of mine, and then kind of the podcast, the, you know, international reach of that. And then of course, there was a drinking element to it as well.
Wow, I didn't expect you to weave those all together, but you nailed that. That was a great way to start. You're talking Prague, and you're talking people from all over Prague. Do you travel semi-frequently, frequently? What's your...
We try to. We've been really blessed to have... we've had the opportunity to travel a decent amount in the last few years. Like, I wouldn't call myself a digital nomad, but that's one advantage of the business is you can run it from anywhere. Yeah. So
yeah, it's interesting because what you do, there are a lot of people that would take that digital nomad element, you know, taking their side hustle and doing it from Chiang Mai, doing it from Eastern Europe, doing it from Prague. But it's interesting that you've done it from Livermore. I shouldn't say interesting, but it's perfectly okay to do it from Livermore, California.
That's right. Well, my wife still works. She's still rocking the day job here.
Sure.
So that's home base for us. And it's kind of become our adopted hometown. Like I said, I grew up in Seattle, but we've been here 10 years and have kind of grown to love it.
Is there a food and drink element you miss about Seattle, out of curiosity?
Oh, my gosh. What do we have to get whenever we're in Seattle? Seafood, of course, is amazing there. Like, Dick's is, like, the local, like, hamburger chain. It's, like, In-N-Out. It's, like, In-N-Out, but, like, on a really small scale. There's, like, five or six Dick's locations in Seattle.
I haven't heard of Dick's before. I feel like Ivar's is what I always come across up there as far as the local chain.
Yeah, on the beer front, have you had, like, Georgetown Brewing?
I don't know if I've had Georgetown. Fremont Brewing is the one that sticks out every time
I'm up there. Have a little better distribution. So Lucille from Georgetown is super good. Even Pike Brewing is good. The Mac and Jacks, which I don't think you can get, you know, that's a very local brew.
Oh, I know Mac and Jacks, yeah.
That one is one of my favorites that you know have to get every time you're there because you can't get anywhere else. Yeah, lots of good beer up there for sure.
Cool. How many countries have you traveled to, just out of curiosity?
I feel like it probably says this on my about page, but I don't know what the number is. Probably like 20-something.
That's good. Is there a country that just blew your mind?
Really, one of our favorites, not necessarily related to drinking, was Vietnam. That was like probably the sleeper pick on this you know 5 or 6 week trip we took to Asia a few years ago. I was nervous because my association with Vietnam is like Vietnam War, and so we're like rolling up like 11. The flight lands like 11 o'clock at night. You know, a little bit nervous to be coming into this like city. You know, in the middle of the night, and it turned out to be, you know, really one of the favorite spots on our stop. So we spent a few days there. We spent a few days up in Hanoi. Super friendly people, amazing food. I don't think we did a ton of drinking, but the drinking we did do was like, you know, super cheap. So that always is appealing to me too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Prague's not too expensive either. If you were going with Prague, that's a good deal of a city. I like how you've kind of downplayed everything you've done so far. You're like, oh yeah, we just took this 6 week trip to Vietnam and you know, we were in Prague and you know, you're living the life, man.
It's a travel hacking life, man. Yeah. I saw you pull out your, the Chase
Sapphire
Reserve.
Chase Sapphire Reserve.
And so I was asking, hey Chris, did you get your 100,000 points for that? Oh, you bet I did.
Yeah. No doubt about that. I'm still milking a few of those right now too. So no, that's good. Well, we're going to bring it back around to side hustling a little bit here for a second. You were mentioning some frameworks for side hustling. It seemed like a good way to start because I'm also interested to hear some of the crazier side hustles you've seen. But what are some frameworks for getting into side hustling? Or is it the different levels? Is that the right way to describe it?
Sure. Well, probably the biggest misconception to kind of dispel right out of the gate is that there's a need to come up with some like crazy curve jumping innovative idea. And it was actually a conversation with Noah Kagan, who writes at okdork.com, the podcast that Noah Kagan presents.
I was going to say, he's nailing his podcast right now.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun, right? And so what he said is like, look, how many sushi restaurants are in your town? You know, probably more than one. And if they've been in business for more than a year, like probably more than one of them is profitable. So it's like there's this misconception that like you got to come up with some like totally crazy new idea.
Yeah.
You probably don't. Like if somebody else has already gone out there, proven the demand, like that's actually that could be a good sign.
It's a sign of validation.
Yeah,
if the market's there, there's room for plenty of others.
So one of the frameworks that Noah shared was just like the scratch your own itch framework where it's like, hey, you know, for the next 2 days, just write down everything that sucks mm-hmm. in your life. And by the end of that, if you don't have a list, if you don't have a decent list, like, hey, your life is pretty good, for one. But every one of those is a potential business idea. Every one of those yeah. is like a problem that probably other people have too that you might be able to solve. So when we were on the show, we were talking about like, oh, meal planning, meal prep. It's kind of a pain point for me and my family. And then, you know, so we were talking about all of the, you know, Blue Aprons and HelloFresh and, yeah. like, and Muncheries, and like all these like meal delivery services that have popped up to kind of address that need. Another framework that I like is the, and this comes from the Tropical MBA show, the Rip, Pivot, and Jam framework, mm-hmm. which is Rip, basically take somebody else's idea, pivot it to a different vertical, a different industry, a different niche somehow, and jam, like go to town, like do the work to go and get customers and make it happen. Where this becomes exciting is like it can become a pretty significant thing. So we recently had Russ Perry on the podcast, who founded a company called Design Pickle on the side. Okay. You know, he had kind of like a consulting, like marketing agency type of business. Mm-hmm. And on the side of that, he says, well, I want to start this design thing. Unlimited graphic design for $370 a month. The price, of course, subject to change. And the cool thing is, Russ said, look, I sucked at design. Like, it was never about him doing the work, which is, yeah. like, a pretty sharp contrast to most, like, freelancing businesses or how most freelancing businesses get their start. And now, like, 2.5 years later, he's doing $400,000 a month in wow. recurring revenue. Like, this thing has taken off like wildfire because, and where the Rip, Pivot, and Jam comes into play here is, like, he ripped this business model off from a friend of his, or like an author that did unlimited WordPress support for $80 a month or something. Hey, people were already buying graphic design, people were already buying website help, mm-hmm. but like we came up with a unique way to package it. Like, there's, you know, there's a pivot on kind of the pricing and sales, and then there's a pivot in the industry, and he, you know, went to town with it and did really well.
So to summarize, the frameworks are
the scratch your own itch framework.
Scratch your own itch. Okay.
The Rip, Pivot, and Jam is one that comes from the Tropical MBA folks, with all due credit.
Yep.
The other one that might be worth noting is, we'll call it like the sniper method.
Okay.
And the sniper method is basically looking at a larger business, a larger operation, and seeing, okay, I don't need to be Amazon, I don't need to be Walmart. Like, what small piece of that can I pick off like a sniper? Like, okay, yeah. I'm gonna carve out a piece of that yeah. pie. And that's kind of the framework that I used when I started the shoe comparison site. I was like, I don't want to build, mm-hmm. you know, this comparison engine that's everything to everyone. Like, I want to carve out like this specific niche in footwear and try and do that better than these other guys.
Well, I will have links to each of those frameworks in the show notes. This will be this is actually good because we don't have as many resource-heavy episodes sometimes. Sometimes it ends up being a show full of drinking stories, which there's nothing wrong with that. But you have provided incredible value today, Nick. And I'll make sure for our listeners out there that you want to find more information on this, that they're able to look that up. So I'll go back to something that you had just mentioned. You had someone that was making $400,000 a month in recurring revenue. But what's, like, as far as an idea goes, what's one of the wildest side hustles that you've come across?
So, actually, a couple of recent ones that come to mind. I met a dude for the podcast, Jacques Hopkins, who runs a site called pianoin21days.com. He's some kind of engineer down in Louisiana.
I was going to say, that's a very specific niche, so I would imagine someone would have to be an engineer to be like, 21 days, done.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to teach you how to play, you know, modern, like, pop songs yeah. on the piano in 3 weeks. Like, that's his niche, and he sells this online course. When we talked, he'd done like $20,000 in the last month.
Wow.
Drives traffic from YouTube, drives traffic from AdWords on yeah. Google, and he's just like gone to town with that and quit his engineering job like to do this full time. Like, it's, you know, really cool what he's built. The other one that comes to mind is actually a really inspiring story. So this woman is a mother of 9. She's a mother of 10 maybe, and she kind of escaped this abusive relationship to start this online business, teaching people how to bake the world's best sourdough bread. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard to imagine like more niche than that. And she's just a sweetheart. And what she's done is she's making $4,000 or $5,000 a month teaching people, you know, in a dozen different courses on the site udemy.com. Mm-hmm. It's UDEMY.com. It's like an online education marketplace.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She has the largest, or one of the largest, privately held Facebook groups of bakers. There are like 35,000 baking aficionados in this Facebook group of hers. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, like, dude, you've got a dozen courses on this like super niche topic of sourdough. What you know, are you worried about running out of content? And she's like, oh, honey, like I could do the breads of Italy, the breads of, I am just scratching the surface on all this stuff. So she like had deep, deep subject matter expertise.
Wow.
And where the story gets inspiring to me is like, she filmed her first course like in her garage because she, you know, her living situation wasn't very good.
Yeah.
You know, she crappy old laptop. You know, she's like, hey, there's a lot of close-ups of my hands in that course because I didn't want to zoom out, have people see the oil stains on the floor, have people see the crappy, you know, wall on the side of the garage. And it was just like, do what you can with what you have when you have it. And I'm really excited to see what she's built.
That's pretty cool. So piano in 21 days to just this baking empire is the breadth of side hustles that you've seen.
Yeah, there's a ton of different stories. There, I met a guy who calls himself the flea market flipper, who just goes to the Orlando flea market, I think it is, every weekend. Says, I look for the odd items because, you know, maybe those are more likely to be mispriced or something. He told me the story of finding like a prosthetic leg for $30 or $40, turning around, selling it on eBay the next day for $1,000. I was like, oh, that's a nice markup. That's a nice margin.
It's funny because like Gary Vaynerchuk hypes that up all the time.
Yeah.
Like for someone that's looking to do anything extracurricular in order to make money, he's like garage sailing. That's what he calls it. It's just like go to garage sales, look at what's being sold, check it on your phone on eBay to see what that item's going for, and then you know the difference in the price and you're like in front of you already, and just do that and resell it on eBay.
Yeah, it's one of the easiest ways to get started for sure.
Yeah. Well, a ton of good advice. We are getting to the end of the show and I am on my last beer of the flight, which is the Raging Moon Imperial Red, and it is definitely an imperial beer.
Is it raging?
It's raging my taste buds right now, that's for sure. You should have a sip, actually. It's a good one.
I'll try it.
I mean, if I hadn't had that Needle Tip Spruce IPA, this would probably be the most flavorful.
I like that one.
This is a really, this is a really good one. This is probably my favorite from the bunch so far.
Yeah.
But as we wrap up, Nick, what is next for Side Hustle Nation and yourself?
So really the focus for me has been on the podcast, trying to step up my game on the production. Like, I don't know, just trying to put out a better show each week.
Yep.
And it's been a really fun channel. Like I said, started as just kind of this afterthought, you know, $100 experiment. And it's really kind of turned into my art, my baby. You know, this is like my fun, like little creative craft thing that I get to do every week. And I don't know if you feel the same way about your show, but
Absolutely.
It's really fun. Like looking at, you know, every Thursday is podcast day. And it's like, you know, putting, you know, another little baby out into the world and hoping that it flies.
Yeah. No, I absolutely hear you on that. As we wrap up here at Shadow Puppet, what are some other spots in Livermore that people should check out? Maybe two or three favorites.
Well, there's four breweries in town that I know of. The oldest or the original is Altamont.
Yep.
And they've got some great brews like the Maui Wowie and like the Shelter, like all those stuff. Like they brew some really good stuff. They claim to be the first brewery in Livermore since Prohibition.
Got it.
So that's their claim to fame. And that's a good spot. Really downtown, the First Street Ale House is like kind of the go-to spot. And then, but it's always like super busy. So the other place, which is cool, that has whiskey on tap is Sauced, like a barbecue place.
Sauced is great. I've been to Sauced before.
Nice.
That's when I take clients out to lunch in Livermore, Sauced is my go-to.
Nice.
That is a rad spot.
It's all about the red Mexican nachos there.
You know, I have a feeling we're going to get a lot of comments on this episode, and I feel like at some point we're going to have to do another side hustle edition of the show. I'll have to bring you back on. Maybe we'll be in Prague or Hanoi.
All right, we'll go hang
time.
Out. Let's do
but it. But in the meantime, what's the best way for people to connect with you?
SideHustleNation.com is the home base. You can find everything we talked about there. And, of course, would love to have you tune in to the Side Hustle Show podcast.
Perfect. Well, Nick, thank you so much for being on the show today. Got a little bit left. Cheers.
Right. Cheers.
For those of you listening, thank you for listening. And we'll see you guys again next time.
Hey, thanks for listening. That tune was Intoxicated by Figure It Out. Sooner or later, I feel like I'm going to run out of pop punk tunes about drinking to use on this episode, but I am not quite there yet. You can check these guys out at Figure It Out AZ, that is in AZ as the abbreviation for the state of Arizona, on Facebook and Twitter. So, like we had mentioned throughout the episode, there were a lot of resources for this one. So, to put it all in one place, I recommend heading over to pubcastworldwide.com because this is where I'll have links to everything. This includes Nick's podcast, The Side Hustle Show. This also includes his website, Side Hustle Nation, as well as all the other podcasts that we were giving shout-outs to at the start of the episode. In addition to having all the links over there, while you're there, make sure to sign up for the Brews Letter at pubcastworldwide.com. Some of you are already on there, but if you want the latest updates from the show, some of my drinking stories that you won't find in these episodes, and other exclusive content, make sure to sign up. That's it for this week, folks. I'll see you again soon, and in the meantime, stay thirsty, and most importantly, cheers!